Hello and welcome back to the Bentley Priory Museum podcast. My name is Alexander and I'm here as your host for this episode. This podcast has been established alongside a temporary exhibition called Bentley Priory's Bunker, Defending Britain from Nazi and Nuclear Threat. Bentley Priory Museum is currently running this project to investigate its top secret underground bunker, which was used both in the Second World War and the Cold War periods. This project wouldn't have been possible without the funding given to the museum by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. This podcast will be highlighting some of the exciting stories of the personnel who work down in the bunker. This episode, Eyes and Ears, the ROC, will be in two instalments, and we will explore the history of the Royal Reserve Corps and its connection to RAF Bentley Priory. We are joined by project volunteer Tim, who will give you some background about the Royal Reserve Corps before diving in to listen to members recount their time at RAF Bentley Priory.
The Royal Observer Corps, or ROC, is perhaps best known for its role as the eyes and ears of the Royal Air Force in World War II, with popular images showing members scanning the skies with binoculars. From the outset, its organisation was based upon geographical areas, with groups subordinate to areas. These groups and areas changed over time as the Corps itself grew and developed, and to reflect the organisation of the air defences generally. Monitoring posts were established in each of these groups, originally 5 to 10 miles from each other. However, a significant change was heralded for the Corps in the mid-1950s, when it was announced that it would take on the then additional role of detection, measurement, and reporting of the radioactive fallout arising from the use of any nuclear weapons in any attack on the United Kingdom. Its nuclear role increased in importance through the late 1950s and early 1960s, essentially being responsible for the prompt determination of the position, height, and power of any nuclear burst over the United Kingdom, and the monitoring of resulting radioactive fallout. Nuclear reporting cells consisting of spare-time members of the ROC were established in the operations rooms of key Royal Air Force establishments, including the Air Defence Operations Centre of Fighter Command in the bunker at RAF Bentley Priory. The cells were usually each crewed by 4 or 5 members of the ROC. Each crew was drawn from a team of 12 or 15 members. The primary function of an NRC was to provide a nuclear burst plot and fallout prediction service for the benefit of the service establishment they were based at. The story of the NRC at RAF Bentley Priory's bunker is told by former Corps members Jim Barnes, Peter Miles, Robin Midwinter, and Margaret Parsons, who all served on the NRC during the 1970s, 80s, and 90s.
Because it was a relatively new role that was formed mid-70s, it didn't really change that much. We were, I think, advised by the UK WMO, which is the United Kingdom Warning and Monitoring Organisation, that had been formed some years before. And so they had identified the kind of role that they wanted the ROC to play in the future years once we'd moved to the nuclear phase. So I think any changes to procedures would have come from them rather than from within the RAF or the ROC. And I think that's how it used to work. But they'd sort of, obviously they'd spent a bit of time working out what was required to present this data. And so the role was fairly well established once I joined.
Our main role was to plot the perspective why nuclear fallout would react and the damage it would cause, and plotting on large-scale maps for the whole of the country. Not only for 11 Group where we were based, but because we were a sector command, we had to cover the other bases as well.
I first joined the Royal Reserve Corps in 1968, but I then rejoined again in 1977. The first time I joined, I was recommended by a friend to go along to a meeting. The second time, when I joined in 1977, I had left a note to say that if the if there was a new opportunity to join the Royal Reserve Corps, I'd be interested in coming back. And I got a letter from the then officer saying he was setting up a new unit at Bentley Priory and would I be interested in joining. So I came along. The first time, I think it was just out of interest. The second time, I had just got a young family and I really needed something different to spend my brain on other than nappies and feeding. So it was just a well-timed operation. And I always enjoyed working for the Royal Reserve Corps. It was completely different work. Nobody else did it. And I was probably quite good at it, because if you're good at something, you quite like it, don't you?
We were part of Bedford Group. We were right at the southern end of the group, right on the edge. But there was a network of posts all over the Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire, Middlesex sort of area. There was 75 to 80 posts, and they were in clusters. They were in clusters of three or four. We had a team of three normally. We'd have somebody who received the information from our own network. We had our own network of group headquarters across the country, and they would be feeding us the information on it like a teleprinter. And then we would have somebody who was then interpreting that, and somebody also tracking the weather. And then we would have the third person who was actually doing the plotting on the screen.
We sort of had a screen propped up like a Perspex screen, and there was a map of the British Isles on there. So our people then said sort of two display A plotters standing beside that, plotting things on the screen.
The plotting was done on a Perspex map, and that was facing out onto the RAF people who were the other side of the screen. It was like a window. And our role was to plot the fallout. So we would use a red bomb symbol for ground burst, a green symbol for an air burst. We'd write very neatly next to it its detail, the details, how big it was, where it was, and then we'd draw the plume showing the track of the fallout would take. And that was updated every hour, because it would change every hour. And it would also change if the wind changed, of course. So it wasn't a difficult job to do. It was quite interesting and quite, as I say, you had to learn to write backwards. You had to learn to write small. And the information came in to us through headphones from our headquarters at Bedford. And we just plot the information they told us. And then there was always always people there that could interpret the information if the RAF couldn't do it themselves.
We needed to use the meteorological information, in other words, direction of the winds and speed of the winds. And we'd receive that information from meteorological centres all around the country, from weather stations around the country. Then as soon as we received that information, we made up templates, to show the directions of the wind, whether it's blowing north, east, west, and so on. And so when we heard that a bomb had gone off somewhere, we would get a symbol and plot the bomb on the screen. And then with the templates, which we would have already drawn up, we then sort of place the templates on the screen, draw around the template. So when we take the template away, then on our screen got mapped where the wind was going, so you could see where the fallout, what direction the fallout from the bomb was going to go and the area which it would be.
Nuclear bombs are plotted as air bursts and ground bursts. And they would have been recorded and first recognised by an ROC post. They would have reported either that they sighted the bomb or felt they had instruments that could measure the pressure of the bomb, or they might have seen the light of the flash. The post could also had instruments that could register how much fallout was in the air without going out. They were also in underground bunkers. And they reported to centres, the local centre for here was Bedford. So the posts would have reported to the centres. And then the centres sorted out the information and would then send almost the same information to somewhere like the Bentley Priory NRC. And then we would plot that information that had been gained from the the outlying posts and plot it on the Perspex screen. And it changes. Every hour, the information changes because either there's been another fallout, another bomb, or the fallout has decreased, or has increased, or it's blown. The wind fallout is, if I remember rightly, is determined by the wind. It's blown by wind. So if the wind is blowing in a certain direction, you're more likely to get the fallout than if you're not in the way of the wind.
Currently on display in the temporary exhibition at Bentley Priory Museum is a nuclear weapon effects computer, described here by Peter Miles.
What they call the nuclear weapons effects computer number 2, which is what we use to predict what was going to happen a nuclear weapon went off. Give you the size of the blast, which is down the bottom here, and set the size of the blast from 10 kiloton, which was what was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, to, I think it goes up to some phenomenal figure of 100 megaton. It never happened, complete annihilation. But the 10 kiloton blast, so dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, which were, and it tells you the type of soil difference there. You've got dry soil, hard soil, saturated, and it gives you the distance or the crater depth in feet, all different things on there. Do we use on the plotting count? Casualties right around the top there, you've got all the casualties, what happened.
We had to sign the Official Secrets Act, so I signed that before I came in. We had to have an interview by the officer, actually, to sort of see if we were the right type of person. So I remember that taking place. And then subject to all the clearances coming back okay, we were in. So it was a voluntary role. We used to get travel expenses and that was all. But it was a couple of hours once a week, and then occasionally these exercises with the RAF, which tended to be on Sundays, which would be probably all day. We might have done it in a couple of shifts, and it was just a great privilege to come up here actually in those days on a weekly basis.
The Observer Corps itself had its own manual which trained everyone, and then as you moved on to different aspects of the Observer Corps, like we were a nuclear reporting cell, so we had a special SOP, or standard operating procedure, which we used to train on for the specific duties involved. So you not only trained for what we had to do down there, you had to make sure all your family were safe. That had been the hardest part, I think, because we were on 24-hour call during the Cold War. You had to leave and get here within a certain period of time. I can't remember what it was. I think it was 4 hours from the time you got the call. So, you used to have to make sure your family was safe. And, yeah, you used to have a complete supply of water and a safe area within your dwelling, not just normal brick walls. You had to reinforce the walls as well, furthest away from outside walls. That was entirely down to you. You had to make your own plans of what you were going to do. It's all part of the training, you know. So, bit difficult that when you used to live in a bungalow. You had no protection above you, only thin walls. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. And once a year, they used to hold an ROC training camp at an RAF base, depending on what. If you were lucky enough to get selected to go on that, you could. Went on it from 83 to 89 without a break. So, depending on what base you were on, what you actually did, they're all the topics are related to the Observer Corps. Some were involved in what we did, which we would instruct on. Others were questioning techniques or weather. I'd predict the weather forecasting and things like that. And yeah, so there was, where do we go? RAF Scampton, Leeming, Waddington, Watton. So it was all over the country, mainly at North Hall, Norfolk. So all active bases, which was quite interesting.
I hope you have enjoyed hearing the many perspectives of the people who spent time in the Royal Observer Corps. In the next episode, we will delve a little deeper into the Royal Observer Corps' history and its vital role it played at RAF Bentley Priory. Although the museum is currently closed, we will be bringing you online family activities over the half term, so do keep an eye on our website and social media for more information about this in the coming weeks. Until next time, thank you.